Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Thank you.
All right, it's Saturday morning. It's 9:38 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the United States, so adjust the time for wherever you are listening to this. If you're listening to the live stream and you're in China, you're 12 to 13 hours ahead of us. Australia about to, depends on what part of Australia you're in, you're 12 to 13 hours ahead of us. But adjust for you, you know, if you're in Uganda. And then, of course, we record all of these live streams and archive them so people listen to the downloads on demand anytime they want to. So today on It's My House, and we're doing a special edition here, we have, the title is Nowhere to Go But Up. So therefore, I played Santana Reach Up for a little morning motivation. Nowhere to Go But Up with Sean Dustin. So good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Great.
Grand
You're
Rising,
calling in from,
any of those things.
You're calling from the West Coast, right?
Correct. I'm in Northern California.
All right, so Northern California, about 6:39 a.m. there. So thank you for getting up or being available this time, because some people are just sleeping in, and you know, in that, you know, that part of the country. So nowhere
to
go but up.
I don't know what sleeping in is, man. I wake up at 4 a.m. every day.
Good. Excellent. Well, you know, that's the first question. Why do you, why have you developed the habit of waking up at 4 a.m.?
You know, it's my, it's when I'm the best, right? When I'm the best version of myself, it's when I get most of my work done. I'm in construction, so, I mean, our work day is from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., usually Monday through Friday. But there's, you know, I live in the Bay Area. There's plenty of traffic. I go where the work is. So I'm usually anywhere from an hour to 2 hours away commute-wise. So therefore, I have to get up so early. And it just transfers over. It's better for me. You know, but you know, it kind of sucks for, you know, my girlfriend, because she's on the opposite of that. So around, you know, 8, 9 p.m., I'm fading, and she's like, let's go.
Okay, all right. Now, I'm going to come back to a question on the Bay Area in a minute or so. Give us your backstory.
So I grew up in the Bay Area, in a little suburb called Pinole. And
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's right outside of, probably about 30 minutes outside of San Francisco, going east.
Mm-hmm.
And, both my parents, my father was a police officer at the time. My mom, I don't know what she was doing. I think she was just a stay-at-home mom at that point. You know, it was a tumultuous environment. He was an alcoholic, abusive, and I don't think that I really even saw a lot of it, but I heard a lot of stories, so those stories just sort of became my story. You know, in the way, you know, because when somebody tells you something, you know how you build a picture in your head, and you know it may not even have been your experience, but because it was an experience that I don't know, that I remembered hearing about, it sort of adopted as my own. So like, I don't think that I was ever present for any of that, but I know that I heard a lot of it. You know, fast forward that, it you know, they split up, broken home, you know, I didn't have a lot of supervision. My mom brought my dad out and kept me in the same home, but for that she needed to go work in San Francisco, which is further away. I was put into daycares, and I was just getting into all kinds of trouble, kind of rebelling and acting out, you know, trying to get attention. And that just, you know, got kicked out of the school that she had me in, where I had a daycare close by. So she had to bring me home. I turned into a latchkey kid. And, you know, for anybody out there that ever thinks about doing that, that's a horrible idea. Giving children free rein to do what they want without supervision or direction or structure is not a good idea. At least it wasn't for me.
Right.
And, you know, and so I just, you know, basically adopted these habits of, you know, being able to take care of myself and doing my own thing. My mom was never there. Not that she was absentee, but she was working, you know what I mean, to support me. And you know, so it, well, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I can't really blame. There's no one really to blame, you know, and it's just not a good thing. And so I just carried that out through going to, into adulthood. But my first introduction to criminality, you know what I mean? I got my first case when I was in high school. And I'd also started using meth in high school as well. And that's kind of where it all kind of went bad. When I first started using meth, probably when I was about 15 or 16. And then that, you know, got me into juvenile hall, did 151 at the boys' ranch, that was 151 days. Finally ended up getting into some real trouble from not, you know, being a, I was just kind of out of control. And so my mom gave me up as a ward of the court, or, you know, declared me incorrigible. And so the state stepped in and took custody of me. Not physical custody, but just like, you know, if you get in trouble, you know, this is what you've got. This is who you're answering to, not your mom. And
right.
So I didn't do very well with that. And so I ended up in trouble again. And they gave me the option to go do 9 months in juvenile hall or to go to a residential treatment center, group home type thing for adolescents. And I chose that because it was both sexes. What do they call it? It was co-ed, I guess.
Okay, co-ed. Okay, women.
Yeah, there was women there,
men
so
and women,
girls,
yeah.
And so
okay.
I was like, yeah, I don't want to go hang out with a bunch of dudes. So I have a drug problem. So yes, let's go over here. And so I became really good at manipulating at a young age, and I think a lot of that had to do with having, you know, two sets of places that I was going to. And so learning how to play sides and do all of that, and then also being so independent, it just made for not a very good combination for me, because I always tried to figure out how to get out of doing stuff.
Mm.
And so that meant like trying to find the easy way out, right? And how can I do that? I don't want a job, so how can I make money? Oh, let's sell some weed. That's a good way to make money. You know, and so I would always seek out the easy way. The easier way than the traditional way. And that just carried out, you know what I mean, through high school into, you know, adulthood. And, you know, I'd have stretches of good time, you know what I mean? But it would always go right back to, you know, I don't want to work. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. So let's, you know, fall back into these old patterns of behavior that I know worked for me. You know, and it wasn't until, you know, it stopped working for me that I decided to change. And that was around 2010. And so, you know, and that's a long road too, because, you know, just because you decide you want to change doesn't necessarily mean that your behavior is going to follow your mind.
Right.
Your behavior is patterns of behavior, whether they're good patterns or bad patterns. For me, they were bad patterns, and they always led me back to point A, you know, the starting point. And thus for my podcast, Nowhere to Go But Up, is because I literally went three times where I went from zero, you know, back to, if you're playing Monopoly, you don't pass go, don't collect 200 and go straight to jail or straight to the bottom, you know, lost everything and had to regain it.
Now, podcast titled Nowhere to Go But Up. Tell us about that podcast and what inspired you to start producing those podcasts.
Well, it was a combination of things, but mostly it was I wanted to get my story out there. Not that it was a remarkable story, But there, you know, I wanted to hear from other people that had been through bottoms or struggles in their life, and I wanted to hear how they got through it, because I had been listening to podcasts about 3 or 4 years prior to starting one.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was an amazing way to get information, to hear how other people, you know, rose above things or got through similar things and that I may have been going through. And I would just thought to myself, like, damn, if this was available back when, you know, I was going through my stuff, maybe my bottom might not have been so low, you know, maybe I might have gotten some information, you know, before I hit those, you know, really, really low lows. And I figured, well, you know, why don't I just start doing something like that?
Right.
And I did. And I didn't realize how much work is involved in it if you don't have, like, the whole team behind you. And
mm-hmm.
people don't realize that, you know, Joe Rogan, yes, it's an amazing thing. And it just looks like he sits there and talks, and that's so much fun. I mean, how much fun can that be, talking to all these people? But there's things you got to do after that. I mean, that's just, you know, that's not all there is to it unless you can afford to pay somebody. So there's a lot of things that were involved in it that I didn't realize. And being as stubborn as I am, I need to figure out the secret sauce to this, right? Because I really enjoy doing it, and I can see myself doing this as a job, you know what I mean? As you know, something that I could get paid to do. But figuring out that secret sauce and how to do all that takes a lot. It's not the easiest thing. If it was, there would be more Joe Rogans out there.
Right, right. Now, some of the comebacks, because I love a good comeback story. What could you give us a sample of some of the comebacks?
So, 18 years addicted to meth. That took me through all kinds of roads. So, I mean, that literally was from like 2000, because I got out of that rehab deal. I went in when I was 16. They let me out when I was 18. So it was about a year and a half. It was only supposed to be 6 months, but you know, they don't go off of time. They go off of progress. And so they had my number. I was a manipulative person. I did all kinds of stuff over there, but eventually I got out. And so that was when I was 18, where'd I go? I went back to my brother, my sister. Well, I have a trans sibling. And so before she had come out, I went down there, and it was sort of a shocker to me because I thought it was for acting, and realized that it was like, this is the real deal. This is what's happening and the transformation right in front of me. And I just didn't deal with it very well. And so left there, and went back to my mom's. For my mom's, I went up to Sacramento or around, say early to mid 90s now. Tried to do some good stuff there, didn't succeed. When I moved there, we moved next to above somebody who did crank at the time, which is meth now. And so fell right back into old habits, old behaviors. That lasted all the way until I think in 2004 I was in Vegas. There's a long, long story, man. This is I did a 3-hour version once, and that was probably the best one I did on a different podcast. But yeah, you can actually find that one. It's on my link tree. But
okay.
You know, coming through that was pretty amazing. And just, you know, it's more so figuring out myself in all of this. You know what I mean? Because I'm literally the one that's causing all of the chaos around me, and my behavior and all this other stuff. And so, you know, the comeback is still happening. You know what I mean? It's never stopped. It's just a matter of, you know, the comeback is just leveling up now. You know, there was a point where, you know, you just keep falling back, takes 2 step forward, 1 step back. And you know, after 2000, and it wasn't even after 2010, but I mean, I would say it went, so probably in the last 5 years is when I got like really serious about, you know, the podcast started. All right, I'm no longer going to use opioids, because I went from a 18-year addiction to meth and right into a 7-year addiction to painkillers. And so trying to get off of that was, and it wasn't as bad as meth, man, because I had somewhat control of it. You know, meth is just one of those things where, I mean, you can't, if you're staying up 3 days, there's no way that you can just go to sleep and roll into a normal work week, you know?
Right.
And so with painkillers, it was a little bit different. I could manage it differently and I could still, you know, work and function and do all that stuff. But I mean, it was still ruling my life. Like everything was moving around it. And, you know, it's like, oh, do I take too many? Oh, I got to wean myself off. I'm starting to feel sick because my dosage has changed. And it was just being ruled by a master like that is just a horrible place to be. Just saying. And I kind of lost my train of thought there, where I was going with that.
Now, for people that want to listen to, the name of the podcast is?
Nowhere to Go But Up.
Okay. And they can,
and
like,
I've
how
switched
do you
over.
Do, I mean, put it out, and how can they listen to it?
So the best place for you to go right now is I switched everything over to Anchor. So I have if you go to Anchor and you type in Nowhere to Go But Up, you'll find it there. That's where it's hosted now, which has all the functions there. You can get to my link tree from there, which shoots out to all the social media, some of the episodes that I've been in. Spotify is where you're going to be able to find all of the video from when I switched over. There are a bunch of videos, probably like 300 of them, I think, that are living on YouTube right now.
And okay. What's the YouTube channel?
The YouTube channel is Nowhere to Go But Up Podcast.
Good. All right.
And so literally you can just Google Nowhere to Go But Up Podcast and it'll show you all the places where it's at, or you can go Sean Dustin on Google and it'll hit you everywhere that I'm at and all the different places that I've been on, you know, like this show will show up there and all the other shows that I've been on will show up there as well.
Okay.
I don't have a website yet. I've been trying to do it, but I those things are expensive.
Oh, now what platform are you using for the host? I mean, are you doing the website yourself, or you paying somebody to do it?
No, I wasn't going to do it myself. I did a year thing over on WordPress, and I couldn't. I just didn't have either the patience to sit down and try to figure it out how it works. Mm-hmm. And so I just, which reminds me, I need to cancel that subscription now, so it's going to re up here pretty soon. I just don't. I need someone else to do it.
Yeah, Homestead. I would say a pretty simple. If you want to, you know, put together your own websites, they have a pretty simple platform to do it. I stopped using them because I was doing my own one page video website. Then I just said, you know what? I'll just use a Facebook page. So that's what. That's what I use. Facebook's, that's my de facto.
Yeah, I like where I've changed to over to Anchor. I'm pretty happy with that, and I'm able to publish rather easily now because I've cut down a lot of what I do. I used to kind of go above and beyond what I, you know, could be doing because I like audio. I like, you know, for the very least for my sound to sound really good, because I mean there's a little bit of play with your guest sound because you don't really have control of that and the audience knows that. But if your sound is top notch, that's a good thing and that keeps people as well. So what you and I kind of found out that we're of sort of the same mindset when it comes to growing food and becoming self-sufficient and, you know, basically gaining, you know, the agency over your own life. And that's really important for guys like me who come out of situations where we've lost agency over our lives and we've given it up to the state or to some other, you know, entity, or the county or whatever it is. And learning how to get that back is paramount, in my opinion, in you know, reentering and you know, moving beyond the mistake that got you there, and you know, not returning back to that.
Right. Well, I'll give it a backstory on It's My House. I'm in Florida. I live mostly here over the last few years, but I have a house in Washington D.C. So I had a house sitter. So when I was running back and forth between the USA and I was living 6 months USA, 6 months in Europe. So I needed I was looking for somebody to rent the house to, but somebody that I knew before had some kind of beef with her sister and brother-in-law, and they were on their way to a shelter. So I said, no need for you and your daughter to go to a shelter. Just house sit for me. You don't have to pay me rent. Just house sit for me. And then the only thing you pay for direct is for, you know, the electric and the, what do you call it, you know, the cable, internet, that type of stuff. So,
yeah,
but you don't have to pay me any rent at all. So that arrangement worked out for like 2+ years. Until I told her, all right, now I need the house back, and she didn't want to give the house. She didn't want to give it. She tried to take the house, so she knew how to use the system. Long story, I'm giving you a very abbreviated story of this account of this. I ended up, because I was going back and forth between, once she started using the system, you know, the legal system, the court system, all that in D.C. Man, I ended up in jail 3 times for contempt of court. So the first time was a weekend. Then it was, this is all within 90 days. Then it was like a 7-day stretch, and then it was another 7-day stretch, and then I was mentally prepared.
Now, was that from outbursts in the court?
No. I didn't see anything in the court, but no, what she did was she would create code violations and then call the building inspector, you know, stopped up toilet or whatever. And once again, I'm 1,000 miles away, 900 miles away to be exact. So I would send a repair person, because I'm in Florida, the house is in Washington, D.C., 900 miles away. So I would send somebody to correct whatever was on that needed to be corrected. However, if they didn't complete the job on time, or if they didn't correct it with workmanship, then they're not looking at the tradesperson. They're looking at me. All right. So oftentimes I would get the, because I paid out the money for everything to be done. So that's what I got cited on, contempt of court, because such and such repairs weren't done as they were called in a timely manner. They don't care about what you paid, or what kind of agreement, or what went down. It's just whatever comes back from their particular agency. So weekend in jail, then 7-day stretch, then another set, all within 90 days. Now, on the fourth time, I was prepared to go. You know, I left money in the books from the last time, the third time in. So just in case I can get some goodies or whatever. So, you know, and I packed. I just had the clothes on my back. But then what I brought with me to court was the last thing I had put in, and it was a big expense, like $4,000. I had to switch over the circuit breaker. Well, I had a fuse system, and although it was up to code, but the inspector wanted to, and then I also found out with the fining and all this other stuff, that's a way for the courts to make money, but that's a whole nother podcast. So anyway, I had pictures that the last tradesperson had. He was real good too. I had pictures from, timestamp pictures from the last job on when it was done. And then on the third time I was in for that 7-day stretch, you know, because they, I think halfway through that, I think like the first 2 or 3 days, you know, they only let you out of the cell for like an hour. But, you know, on the, I think the third or fourth day, you're out for hours. You know, you just come on in late at night so you can play games, watch TV, go to the library. They got snacks, lemonade.
Vending machines.
They didn't have a vending machine where I was. But, any kind of game you can think of, Monopoly, Party, and all that was, it was rec time. Although you were locked, it was rec. So anyway, but my cellmate, I told him about my case. So between him and the electrician, they told me how to get the case closed. And that's how I was able to get the case closed. So now, for a whole year, because, man, that talk about PTSD, that was my PTSD. I was afraid to go to the mailbox. I was going to court like for over like 2 years, twice a month. And you know, $20,000 on that transportation easy in that period of time. So a few times when I sent the repair people over, she would say it's not his house, it's my house. And I even had to call the judge's chambers a few times, you know, so they would tell her, you need to let the people in to do the work. So anyway, when I was thinking about a podcast, and this is a little bit over a year after the whole thing ended, and it took 3 years for it to end. So a friend of mine was saying, well, why don't you call it It's My House? And then I remembered what this squatter said repeatedly to, you know, repair people or whatever. So I said, you know, that's it. It's my house. So this podcast started out as basically teaching people about property rights, how to deal with squatters and things of that nature. But to do that every day, because I decided, you know, what I wanted to do it 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. It, you know, that'll be kind of boring. So overall, we've done over 2,000 podcasts in 8 years and counting. And
that's a lot.
We cover trending topics, and then every now and then we'll come back to a property rights topic. But overall, we, you know, trend. So if whatever's hot in the news, you know, we, you know, that's what people want to talk about, that's what we talk about. But that's the origins of It's My House.
Now, what you're talking about, and you know, people that know how to use the law, and you know, lawsuits and use the systems, they're slick, man. And
I had to, this was after everything was over with. I enrolled in law school online about a year or so after that. Because one of the lessons I learned was, instead of looking at her as a monster, I read the book Seed of the Soul by Gary Zukav. You know, people like this, I had to reframe her. I said, she's not a monster. She is a Zen teacher, and she revealed to me some things I needed to learn. So I enrolled in online law school so I can learn some, you know, basics of the law and how the system works and all that other stuff. So in politics, too, they don't teach that in law school, that part of it. But that was some of the things. And we talk about that. We have law clinics every now and then on there, too. You don't have to go to law school or anything, but we have a saying, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. So,
oh yeah,
I didn't
and
know my rights.
They can still come after you. So here's a situation where, you know, a guy rented a house to his friend, and at some point, they didn't pay. Like he was going to try to sue him, I think, anyways. And so he has a friend that's a lawyer. And so, you know, he went through litigation and everything else. So long story short, he ended up having to pay the guy $20,000 to get him out of his house.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the guy broke everything that was in there, right? Just trashed the place.
Right.
And moved on. And now the guy is the guy who rented the house to him. You know, he is in a club that he is the director of, or the, you know, he's the one who's on the board that runs the club or whatever. And so this guy shows up, and now he's trying to create another situation where he can go after him, because if he tries to tell him, no, you can't get into the club because of whatever, now he can have a discrimination lawsuit against him. So it's like, this guy's not only he's coming back for more, trying to create more situations that he can sue over.
Right. Right.
These are people, man.
You got some, I call them professional tenants or professional squatters. And I discovered a whole lot of that exists. So we do some podcasts, you know, every now and then on, we call them legal clinics. And we might have a lawyer on, or, you know, just a lot. You can do a whole lot. You can learn a lot if you just get a hold of a law, what do you call it? Black's Law Dictionary, which are online, or a legal dictionary, which is online, and just learn some vocabulary, basically. And, you know, it's not difficult, really, the way I look at it. And then you can sort of pick and choose. Now, another thing that came out of that whole squatter situation with It's My House is I wonder, why would a person try to take somebody's house? Because I discovered there was a whole lot of people, and this is ancient. As long as man's been around, some man's been trying to take somebody's house, somebody's property, somebody's. I mean, Genghis Khan was basically a land grabber. Mm-hmm. To be honest about it, you know. So
then you have eminent domain where they can legally steal your shit.
Right, they can legally, and we've done some podcasts on house hijacking or house jack, how predators can legally steal your house. In eminent domain, you're absolutely right, is one of the ways that they can do that. And we've covered that topic a few times. But the common denominator I found out with a lot of squatters, and just not squatters, but people that might have trouble paying their rent, paying their mortgage payment or whatever, is the common denominator, particularly with the squatters, are these people do not know how to build their own house. And if you look at the history of where people live, households, most people, if you look at the history of man, knew how to build their own shelter. From a dugout to a treehouse to Abraham Lincoln's cabin, they knew how to build a simple structure where they can sustain and you know, raise a family. So in our modern era here, in most Western countries, unless you're in an Amish community or Mennonite community, they don't teach you anything about, you know, they teach you how to be dependent upon outside forces. In other words, you have to go to Whole Foods, you have to go to a grocery store to feed, you know, you have to have the money to buy. Whereas about 150 years ago or so, a lot of people had their grocery store, at least part of it, in their backyard, because they grew food, but they knew how to catch food, and they knew how to build a house.
People coming out of
so
the depression.
One of the new things that we're doing is this is a startup for us, though. We're teaching... We shall be teaching people how to build their own house. Now, it'll be an off-the-grid house with solar and all that type of thing, and it'll be a tiny house, but it'll give you the basic fundamentals of carpentry. And then
a person who's
got more lofty
ambitions,
then
they
can take
command. Where are you
going
to put it?
Very good question, because one of the first things that we teach people is, number one, this is done primarily in rural areas. You're not going to pull this off in San Francisco or Seattle or New York City or Chicago. All right. However, if you go to, like I'm in Florida. Now, I'm in
you're building
old.
On the sidewalk, you know, in a park.
Yeah. I live in Lakeland,
Excuse
Florida.
Excuse me, sir.
But,
what do you think you're doing?
Right. I
I'm
live
building
in Lakeland,
my tiny
Florida.
Home.
Right. You have to go to a rural area. Now, I personally buy rural land. Like, my first 4 acres is in northern Florida, in Hamilton County, Florida, and that's primarily a rural area. But I tell people what I do. I look for land that's zoned agricultural, because with agricultural land, you have the most amount of freedom. There's some laws there, county by county, city by city, but you have the most land there. I mean, the most freedom there. And the minimum, if you want to call it a house in that particular county, on that particular land zone agricultural, is 480 square feet. All right. Now, to me, that's a small house. All right. But I'm not going to go into details all that, but that's where I can legally do what I want to do. Looking at the landscape, but wait a minute. Looking at the landscape, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Only 10 of those have a population, those municipalities have a population of a million or more people. So, and I say, look, subtract 10% of that 19,500, and there are plenty of places across the United States. Like, I have another 10 acres in Texas, in Presidio County, Texas, that I paid $2,000 for. I can do what I want to do there. Granted, there's no bus lines there. I know that. I knew that in advance. Granted, the nearest Walmart's 2.5 hours, 3 hours away in El Paso. I knew that in advance. So I tell people, where you're going to do this is primarily in a rural area. If it's not in a rural area, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, unless you got deep pockets and political connections and a big city to pull it off. But in San Francisco, it ain't happening. However, if you go to a rural area of Northern California, you can do it, but you got to find the right county. So, that's
yeah, you can
point.
Do that in my county here. I live in an agricultural area. It's a rural, even though it's in the Bay Area. I'm on the eastern part of the Bay Area that's bordered with Sacramento County, and it's moving. And we're in the Delta. So we have lots of room to grow out here, and
from where you're at, Sean, how long is it drive time from, let's say, San Francisco proper to where you are, where you can legally build something tiny?
I am without traffic. If I just, you know, I'm probably about an hour.
Not bad at all.
Now with traffic, if you can add about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, depending on the time of day and the traffic. So if you're in the beginning of it, you're probably about an hour and a half. If you get towards, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 p.m., it'll take you about 2 hours to get here.
Right.
But I mean, there's so many parcels that people are living on that are could be farmed, but they're just not doing it. And
right.
So what I would like to do is, you know, because you could do this, what I want to do, either with, you know, returning citizens, or you can do it with the homeless population or veterans.
Returning,
you know,
citizens,
I mean,
homeless people, single parents.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Or somebody, I had a friend of mine living in Livermore. Man, she struggled for years in Livermore.
That's expensive.
Her and a friend of hers moved to Northern California on 2 acres, I think I told you about.
Yeah, yeah. And so what you could literally do is, like, if you can lease that land and farm it for these folks,
right,
and then you get your other piece of land where you're actually housing these folks, and you just bus them or van them to and from the locations that you've leased out from the properties that you could farm. And so mm-hmm. you're just literally, you know, putting a team over here to work this one and a team over there to work that one. And then you just come back by and, you know, for lunch and all these other things. But I mean, you're literally, you're teaching people. And I know that this works because I've done it myself.
Right.
A little backstory on that is last year was the first year that I grew anything, right? Because I had the place to do it. And I grew one tomato plant that I just kind of let go and, you know, just run wild. And it got huge. And my daughter helped me plant it. And at that time, she was about, three and a half, four. And she didn't want to, she likes to eat a lot of stuff that's not necessarily the best for her. And, and it's partly my fault because I allow it, but I was like, I was trying to think of things to like, how can I get her to eat better? Well, this was the thing, because every time she would come over, a co-parent, she would go and look at it and see that how big it was getting. And then she started seeing the fruit and the tomatoes. Right. And then the first one that was ready, I let her pick it and she ate it right there on the spot. And from that point on, she liked tomatoes. And she did that
again this year
with snap peas and was just eating them raw right out of the shell, right out of the husk. And so, and for me too, it like there's a confidence that you gain from learning how to sustain yourself that you can't get from anything else. It's just not possible. It's probably I would say the next best thing is hunting your own food. You would get that same sort of feeling, right? Of that confidence of, okay, I could survive, right? I know how now. I've got seeds that I've, you know, from what I've grown that I've dried. Now I can do this again next year and I can continue to do this. You know, there's just ways of life that, you know, my grandparents, I used to go to their house and they went through the Great Depression and I would always see like a bunch of mason jars of preserved food. And I always wondered, you know, what that was. And you know, I thinking back on it now, that is a skill that was not transferred, right? And because we were living in abundance, so we thought, and that we didn't need to worry about that anymore because we have the grocery store. We don't need to preserve food. But as we're seeing the supply chain and you know, how important and how you can control populations through food. I mean, who said it? Kissinger? Isn't Kissinger the one that said that? Or
he's probably one among many or a few that have said that.
Yeah, and so...
Wait a minute. I want you to listen to something. Let's come back to what you're saying particularly because you mentioned something about it. I want you to hear this.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day up popped a for sale sign and she squealed the whole way home
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500 and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account. He said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
Now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has
3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the Tiny Home Nation. She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same, which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor F. 7 Eyewitness News.
Welcome to Camp Hugay.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had, and he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far, $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas, and I liked this beachy boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I liked that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white, and then our kitchen cabinet turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up, and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the backside came from our house, except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen, where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator, to fit inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for $1 at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it says Lauren's Little Camper. I got this sign from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have 4 beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that, so it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it, but she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
All right, Sean, when I thought of, when you mentioned your daughter and a tomato, I thought of Laura Nelson, so I said, let me play this one. What are your thoughts?
I actually thought about that as an idea for trying to, that same thing, the same concept, using, older motorhomes, or not motorhomes, but trailers that could be refurbished. And then having the guys that are going to be living in those trailers come help to refurbish them. So they get some skills, and they also get an idea of, having put some sweat equity into it. Right. And you're going to have a little bit more respect for where you live if you had a piece in helping to provide it for yourself.
True. You're absolutely right. Now, what about doing something with your children now?
Like
you taught your daughter, I mean, she knows how to, grow a tomato plant. And she still might, teach them how to build their own structure.
Now, my other daughter would probably fit that description. The one that lives in Vegas, she's 22 now. She's sort of, she's working, but, not doing things that she wants to be doing and, could probably, I have a fifth wheel that I live in, or I lived in 2020. Mm-hmm. That's, probably nicer than my first apartment. I've offered to have her come out here and, you can stay in that and, she does videography stuff, professionally. So I'm like, there's tons of opportunities out here, but, trying to get her to leave some people just don't like to like change like that,
right?
So I've tried, and that would be a great idea. Sorry about that, I got a cramp.
Well, the reentry people, it's a variety of people that, as you stated, who can benefit from that. Now, I saw your YouTube channel, which for people listening, wait a minute, I hit the wrong button. Where is it? I just had it. I was just looking at it. Let me X that up. Nowhere to Go But Up podcast. The YouTube channel is Nowhere to Go But Up, and you type it into YouTube just like that, then his vlogs or podcasts are on there. You can also go to Anchor as well, all right, on that platform. Is there any phone? Oh, now you're on Clubhouse as well, right?
Yep, that's how we met. Clubhouse.
And now, do you have a room titled Nowhere to Go But Up, or is it under just Sean?
I have a club.
Or what?
I got a club called Nowhere to Go But Up, but I don't do a lot in that club or through that club. I frequent the morning chat, the podcast morning chat. I've been a part of that community for a long time. And then the Preservation of the Human Race, I go and listen to a lot of stuff there, or the True Seekers Tavern. But other than that, I don't spend a whole lot of time, in other spaces there.
Okay. All right. Well, Clubhouse, I look at it at and other audio apps, because that's not the only one but that's probably the most used audio app, at least from my research so far.
Stereo.
What I like about it, it's the Wild West, and there's a lot of things that you can potentially use that app for. So.
They haven't gotten too strict on the censoring over there yet. I mean, it happens if you're talking about certain things, but. Not like over in stereo where, I've never been over to stereo. I think I listened to it once and it was strange to me at the time. I just wasn't ready for it.
Oh, wait a minute. My phone's sensitive. You pick it up the wrong way, it hits the button. So it continues. There we go. Let me turn this volume all the way down. All right, go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. And once again, now, for the people that want to live, that's right, because with Anchor, I use Anchor about 3 or 4 times a year, but I just use it to make announcements, like a 2 to 5 minute announcement, whereas this platform, Blog Talk, I use it this week I got 6 days out of it, although I can use it 7 days. But But
yeah,
I
the reason why I switched from Libsyn over to this was, I mean, this is free, Anchor's free, but
yeah.
It was also, I needed to change things up a little bit. You know, I was in like a rut, and not a rut, but just, you know, in a downturn with content and producing it. And it's just time, you know what I mean? Just, there's a lot going on. There's, you know, when you're working in construction in the Bay Area, especially commercial, and having to go where the work is, your week is literally dedicated to that. And, you know, 14 to 12 hours of that, you know, from the time you wake up till the time you actually get home and have time for yourself to do other things, there's just not enough time for all of it. So I had to, kind of focus more or look at what was more important, you know, and what I was doing, and like, okay, well, can I trim this? Can I trim that out of what I was doing to make some more time? Like, how can I make this process easier for myself where I can still get these, you know, 70 episodes that I've already done, and I need to get them out onto the podcast mm-hmm. platforms. And, you know, it became this chore, and the fun left. You know what I mean? Because I let it all stack up like that, and so,
right.
I had to, figure my way through it, and and so now I've got, you know, this new system that I'm hopefully will allow me to, you know, move through some of this content rather quickly. I just did one right before I hopped on here, and that was quick. I mean, that was like 15 minutes. I was able to take one of the live streams that I needed to upload to the podcast platforms. I mean, this had been published a long time ago on YouTube or, you know, the live stream to Facebook or Twitter, but I'd never put it over to, like, you know, to the audio only places. So this will allow me to run through 30 live streams that I need to switch over rather fast. So I'm
okay.
Happy with that.
All right.
And
now,
I'm also producing.
Any...
I'm looking forward to a new podcast that I'm going to be working on, which is in my industry, and it's going to be called the NorCal Building Trades Podcast. And so that'll be for folks that are trying to get into the building trades, or folks that are already in the trades in this area, Northern California. But for the ones, people trying to get into it, this can go for, it doesn't matter what area you're in. This will be helpful to you when I get everything onto the website for it and everything. And you'll literally, I mean, if you want to get into being a carpenter, there'll be interviews from women and men journeymen on, like, their journey into the trades and what they like about it, what they don't like about it, you know, what would they would suggest somebody getting into the trade, what to watch out for. You know, it's giving people a better idea of the trades and what to expect from certain trades, because I feel like people aren't getting where they need to go. They're getting into the trades for the wrong reasons, you know, like, oh, my dad did it, so I did it. But it's really not what you want to do. So when you're doing, especially when you're spending so much time, 12 to 14 hours a day in your trying to get to and from, if you're spending that much time doing something you don't like doing, then what is the rest of your day going to look like to the people that you come in contact with? You know what I mean? You're probably not going to be that pleasant to them if you're angry most of your day. And
right.
So I just think getting people where they need to go and a better idea of what to look forward in the certain trades, I think would help to get people closer to their target and treat this like a career. A lot of guys, they get into the trades and they treat it as a job. And it's not really a job. This is for folks that want to have some longevity here. I mean, because at one point this was the path to the middle class.
Right.
And that middle class
still is.
Well, it's diminishing. There's been an attack on the middle class for a long time. You know, they're constantly trying to find ways to you know, shake the tree and knock people, you know, down a level.
Yeah, I have a 4-year college degree, and man, basically, I'm learning carpentry and house building. That's where I'm at.
Now, my question to you is that somebody wants to do this, is there a pre-plan, like, that you can purchase, or do you have, like, a template of, like, okay, if this is the kind of, like, you're mass-producing this type of a home that you already have the plans for, and, you know, all you do is, you know, here's this, you just, it has all the materials that you're going to need, and almost like a
well, Well, I'm glad you mentioned IKEA. First thing, I'll send you a plan later today. We got something smaller, 8x8, and I'll send you that today. And but the goal is, you said my favorite word, IKEA. Something that people can put together, because my ex-wife was a big fan and still is of IKEA. And some other ladies I know, they swear by IKEA. So I'm thinking about, because I started off as a landlord in 82. No, actually 83. I signed the contract in 80, but 83 officially. So after that learning experience with that squatter, I said, number one, I don't need to own anything or have anything to do other than to visit or eat or go to a restaurant or hang out with friends in a large municipality. That's number one. Did you ever see that movie Pacific Heights?
I did. It was a long time ago, so I don't really remember it.
Yeah, well, it was about a professional squatter played by Michael Keaton. He basically hijacked the building of this young couple. They were working on their first fixer-upper building in San Francisco. So San Francisco has, to my knowledge, always been expensive. So, but that's what that movie was about. So, in any event, so I said, well, I tell my, you don't want to do this in the city, not to start, and then find you a rural area. But if you know some basic carpentry, where you can build simple structures, but in some people, because I talked to one lady last night, matter of fact, it was on Clubhouse, and she pays outrageous rent, but all she wants is a turnkey situation, so that's a whole nother mindset. However, the IKEA idea, that's before the end of the year, that I want to have something together where we can do it, I mean, put together a kit IKEA style, and where a fifth grader or at least a 10th or 12-year-old can put it together. So, you know, it, like a Lauren Nelson. If a Lauren Nelson can do it, then anybody can do it. That's where I want to go with this.
Well, that will definitely be something interesting to check out. And I like what you're doing, man. I should have you on mine and explain your concept. And, you know, there's definitely a need for it, for sure.
Well, I looked at this score. I mean, all the money that was spent, attempted extortion that she tried to pull, using the system, like you said, and I didn't know, but the if you know how to build your own box, because that's how I look at a house. It's a glorified box that has maybe some other boxes, which we call rooms, inside of it. So the build, and we're talking about tiny houses. I'm not talking about the Taj Mahal. You need to know where to do this. It's not going to happen in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, Washington, Chicago. However, if you go 30 minutes, an hour, maybe 2.5-3 hours outside radius, land values, depending on what part of the country that you live in, dramatically drop. So you can pick up something by the acre, and an acre is the size of a football field, okay? And you can build something with no mortgage on it, and you just have to keep up the property taxes, but it'll all be dramatically less expensive than trying to pay. I don't know what I mean. I've got a friend of mine that lives. Well, there's several people like in the DMV. That's the DC area. And you got people in D.C. that might rent a room for $1,000 a month. In New York City, you know, that might jump up to $1,500 to $2,000 a month. I don't know what
I'm
it is.
I'm
not talking about an apartment, but what would a room rent for in San Francisco proper?
Oh, man, it's expensive. Well, it's gone down a little bit because of the situation and, you know, people moving and leaving, being able to work remotely from wherever. So there was a huge drop in population there for not a huge, but I mean a significant amount of people that left. But I don't know. I would still say, I mean, I knew a guy that had a 2-bedroom, maybe 1.5 bath for, I don't even think it was, no, it might've been 1.5. And they were paying like $3,000.
Well, see,
$3,500.
That's 3 mortgage payments to me.
The place that I live in is $2,000 a month, and it's not even a whole bedroom because it doesn't have a closet, but it has its own entry and outry. But I mean, it's still way too expensive, in my opinion, for what it is and how old it is, and it's not even level. Like, I got to be careful because I'll roll downwind.
Right.
Well,
see, you own the because you say you're in the fifth wheel.
No, I have one that's set up on the outside where I put a 50 amp outlet on this rental so I could have access to it. You know, and I'm thinking about renting it out. Just because of there's tons of people that need shelter these days.
Right.
You know, at least.
Well, yeah, like I said, I like what you're doing, the comeback shows. I just love, sometimes when you're down and out, matter of fact, when I'm down and out sometimes, I search YouTube and I'm looking for a comeback story. One of the audios I play on here typically is a guy named Jamarian Styles. And when he was in high school, and Jamarian has stumps for arms. He has no hands. But he really wanted to go, let me find it. But it's a good comeback story. Or not so much comeback, but if he can do it, I have no excuses. So
yeah.
That's what
motivation
with you.
I have a hard out though at 8.
Oh, okay.
I gotta get to watering the garden before it gets to, before the heat gets too
okay,
much. It's been like
that, you know what,
triple
I'm,
digits
I'm
around here.
Time. So it is. It's almost 8 there now, right?
Yep.
Okay, well, let's wrap this up. Any closing comments? And how can people reach you and listen to the podcast?
The best way, like I said before, is probably to go to just Google Nowhere to Go But Up podcast, and everywhere that I'm at will show up there, or just type in Sean Dustin into Google, and same thing. Or you can just go to my link tree, which has links, direct links to all of the places that the show is at and I'm at, which is Nowhere to Go But Up, /LINK tr.ee/nowheretogobutup. And other than that, my closing thoughts are learn how to grow your own food and become self-sufficient. You know, the more you rely on yourself and the less you rely on the systems that are in place to keep you in your place, we need to be moving away from those and going back to a simpler way of life.
All right. Well, thank you, Sean, for coming on this Saturday morning. It's a great way for me to start the weekend. So people listen to Nowhere to Go with Up, But Up with Sean Dustin. Everyone have a good rest of the day, and thanks, Sean, for dropping out.